The paladin paused on the bridge, and the water around him began to froth.
And seconds, Diz doesn't just mess with energy. She can make zombies too. If only we had a giant pile of dead fish nearby for her to play with.
The paladin looked down at the frothing water, and Kael smiled.
Oh, wait! We do!
A writhing mass of golden scales and white bellies roared out of the water, mouths gaping, and hit the paladin like a solid wave of flesh. He hit the water screaming, and as he went under, the water around him churned white and then red.
Nicely done, Desidora said as she rose from the water, standing upon fish that floated belly up to support her weight.
She was drenched, her sopping hair and dress pitch black. There was a time when that would have bothered Kael. Today, he grabbed Bertram.
You too, Diz. Come on.
She turned, her skin chalk white, gazing at the pile of rubble under which Gil's power sat.
He's down there.
Diz, not now.
You've got nothing that can hurt him, and if he gets into a paladin's hand, we're dead.
He used me, she said. And even through the coldness of her death aura, Kael heard the hurt.
He lied to me.
And you'll make him pay for that someday, Diz, I promise.
Kael took her arm, not hard.
Not today.
She turned, her eyes dark, and then she blinked, and her hair slid back to red and her dress to pale green. She nodded shortly and pushed past him to where Tala lay at the foot of the steps. She checked the woman's pulse, then grimaced and shook her head.
Go in peace, Yeshke, Kael murmured.
Where to now? Either the tree ship or inside to search for Locke.
Tree ship, then. You don't send more people after a scout unless you're sure she needs help.
Kael nodded and, holding Bertram gently, led the way out of the garden.
Right now, I feel bad for anybody in Locke's way.
Everything seemed to be happening too quickly for Tern. She was fumbling for her crossbow while the puppeteer raised his arm toward Icy. She didn't get it out in time. The puppeteer fired a blast of crimson energy, and Icy, barely a few feet away, did one of those crazy things he did with his body, twisting to the side and sliding onto his back at the same time, so that the blast ruffled his golden robes, but hit nothing else.
Icy, fight him!
Tern flipped the safety off the crossbow.
I cannot!
Icy sprang back to his feet as a crimson blast cracked the stage where he had lain.
If you're that unstoppable guy, you can! Fight him!
Tern raised the crossbow, aimed carefully, and fired a perfect shot at the puppeteer's heart. The puppeteer leaned back in an elegant move, almost identical to Icy's, and the bolt whisked past him.
I cannot! Icy shouted.
And then the puppeteer's next blast clipped his shoulder, and he spun in the air and landed on the stones past the stage, rolling to a stop and shaking his head a moment later.
Tern!
Hessler shouted. And Tern looked over to see the trackers running into the market square, the scorpion in his cloaked dwarf disguise, and the ogre and the bony troll lady. The crowd was screaming as the ogre swatted people aside. Too much, too fast. Icy was a killer, and Hessler was behind her, and she had no idea which bolt to use. She went with Silver, in case the trackers were vulnerable to it like fairy creatures were, but she was still looking at the puppeteer.
Acquisition parameters have changed, the puppeteer called out. We have Locke. These are expendable.
He looked at Icy and raised his arm. Tern fired, and again the puppeteer dodged it, and he shot Tern a look and called,
You're next,
as he fired. The blast of crimson energy lashed out. It hit Derry instead, as he stepped out in front of Icy, and he stumbled, then stood back up, shaking off the blast.
I won't let you hurt my friends.
Hessler was flinging illusions at their assailants, and Tern remembered that he'd said they affected the creatures as though they were solid. Shackles formed around the troll, and a great blade slashed at the scorpion.
Watch for the feedback, he was muttering,
and as the scorpion lashed its stinger at the blade, Hessler flicked the illusion away. The crowd was screaming and running now. Someone slammed into Tern, and she fell to the stones, dizzy and shaken, then pushed herself back to her feet, fumbling with her crossbow and bolt. Derry was trading blows with the puppeteer, and Hessler was juggling illusions as the bony troll slid out of the shackles. And then the crowd parted, and something hit her, and it felt like cool water splashed across her chest, and she looked up to see the ogre standing over her, with its fist magically incorporeal, inside her chest.
"If you are expendable," the ogre said, her tusks muffling the words, "then this is not murder." Tern had no time to react.
But as the cold feeling started to change, a giant fist of solid stone slammed into the ogre, and she crashed to the ground yards away. Tern fell to the ground as well, and looked down at her chest, seeing five little finger holes in her dress right around the heart.
"You want her," Hassler said coldly, standing over Tern with hands raised. "You go through me."
And Tern looked up at him, breathing hard to tell him she was all right. She saw the troll behind him, but by the time she screamed a warning, it was too late. The bony lady was suddenly a creature of rope and sinew, twining herself around Hassler in coils of flesh, and he flinched and tried to fight it, but she was like a snake, wrapping tighter and tighter.
"I see,"
Tern raised her crossbow.
"Derry, help!"
Hassler was glowing with little sparkles everywhere, and he seemed smaller or thinner or gone.
"Mr. Hassler!" came a cry, followed by a cracking impact, and the puppeteer sailed across the market square, hit a wall hard enough to leave a mark, and did not move.
In front of Tern, the troll coiled herself back into a woman's shape.
"Bring him back,"
Tern said.
"There is no back," the troll said with a sneer. "He is scattered to the..."
A crossbow bolt thunked into her chest.
"Bring him back," Tern said.
"He is dead,"
the troll said.
"And my cursed flesh cares little for bolts or blades."
"Does it burn?"
the alchemist asked, and the troll looked down at the stain spreading across her dress from the bolt. Tern tossed a flask that shattered as it hit the troll, and as the two liquids mixed and clinging flames reared the screaming creature, she shouted,
"Bring him back, you bitch! Bring him back!"
"A curse cannot be reversed," the ogre said,
and Tern looked over to see Derry on the ground, groaning as the ogre came toward her.
"He is dead, transformed into the very shadows he used in his figments, and soon you will..." "Arching ardour."
"Shadow-touched Benisti," Ululenia said, her hooves clopping on the stone of the market square as she put herself between Tern and the ogre.
"Caught between here and there, never real. A cursed reminder to your people that you came from the Glimmering Folk, that you are monsters."
"Dark Fae,"
the ogre growled, shaking her head and coming forward again.
"Stolen magic of the ancients, and turned to consuming your own. We are not so different, you and I."
"There is one difference," Ululenia said,
and something in her voice was different, and when Tern looked at her, her shape was different as well. She was still a unicorn, but her shining horn curved and bristled with spines. Her hooves were clawed, and fangs gleamed in her long mouth.
"I am not bleeding from the throat."
She lunged, and the ogre roared, and then fell back and sank to her knees, one hand trying vainly to cover the dark blood that poured from her wound. The same blood stained Ulilenia's fanged muzzle as she turned to Tern.
"We must flee. There will be more."
Tern looked back. The scorpion had pulled the still-burning creature away, and they were across the market square now. Derry was still on the ground, icy on his knees beside him. Hassler was gone.
"I want him back," Tern said,
and let Ululenia pull her away. Locke found Tala's body at the foot of the stairs, leading back to the water garden. It seemed Narya had been right about Locke's presence here endangering people. Locke closed Tala's eyes, said a quick prayer, and stepped onto the path of wooden bridges leading between the platforms. One of the columns rising up from the platforms had been destroyed, and the water was full of dead fish. She crossed a bridge, stopped at a platform, and inhaled. It didn't smell like flowers anymore.
"Is a Fasira?"
Locke opened her eyes. Irithella Flealon was at the far end of the water garden, making his way across the paths toward her.
"Ethel,"
she started walking again. "What are you doing here?"
"Thelenia told me where you were. I discovered that the ancients were waiting here, and I came as quickly as I could."
Locke nodded, still walking.
"You weren't wrong.
She crossed another bridge, turned at a platform, and headed for the one where Kale and Isadora had been waiting. I'm glad you're here.
I need you if I am to survive the coming of the ancients, Irithella Fleolon said, coming to meet her. With the dragon gone, whatever mad scheme you have in mind is the only hope of the Elflands.
She nodded again and turned to reclaim her walking stick where she'd left it, and spun to parry the blow that would have caught her in the back. I think you have your own plan to save the Elflands, Locke said as her blow knocked his aside. Irithella Fleolon brought his rapier up in a salute. The red wood of the blade gleamed.
How did you know?
I faced you across the card table, Locke said, and drew her blade from the walking stick's hidden sheath. You think humanity is a waste of time? The elf's blade flashed, and Locke parried, then countered, driving him back.
Tell me I'm wrong, Isifasera.
You only helped us because it was what the dragon wanted, Locke said, pressing her attack. She drove him back across the bridge, then danced back as his retreat turned into a roll that swept his blade at her ankles. As soon as he was gone, you should have cut us loose. Instead, you offered information and loaned us a tree ship. She slashed, and he sidestepped to the edge of the platform, leaning farther than any human except maybe Icy would be able to without falling, and countered with a slash at her head that she caught, locking their blades.
I never dreamed that my manners would give me away, he said as he moved in, pushing on the locked blades, and Locke saw the angle of his body change with a twist he tried to hide, and caught the stab from the dagger he'd slipped into his other hand on the stick sheath.
Impressive. You've gotten better.
Last time we fought, I bled deep. She shoved hard, and he went with it, pivoted around her and spun into a slash that she blocked with her blade. She got a shot into his ribs with a stick sheath and took a shallow cut across the forearm from his offhand dagger. I try not to make the same mistake twice. His kick caught her at the ankle, and rather than fall while vulnerable to his blade, she turned it into a tumble into the pool, slashing out even as she fell with a low sweep that the elf leaped over. Locke hit the water, surfaced with her blade and stick moving, and got lucky, catching his stab with blind luck and sweeping it aside as he lunged into the pool after her.
I'm still faster,
Irithella Fleolon murmured, sliding into the water with barely a splash. Faster than the dragon. Locke came in low, caught his block and aimed a blow at his head with the stick sheath. He caught it with the dagger, hooked the blade behind the sheath and tore it from her grasp. And she came up with a high little cut as she fell back, her blade catching his upper arm and leaving a thin line of blood across his cheek. Though you didn't kill him with the silver dagger we found in the study. He touched fingers to the cut on his face and smiled grimly.
I weakened him enough to capture, as the ancients requested. They wanted him for some reason.
Now with two weapons to her one, he came in hard, forcing her to retreat as quickly as she could in the waist-deep water.
You seem to have thought of everything.
Almost everything. Locke swept her blade back and forth in an uneven rhythm, hiding the timing of her moves, and Irithella Fleolon ducked down so that only his head showed above the water and lunged forward like a leaping dolphin. Locke guessed at where his blade was, missed, and felt pain bite into her lower leg. Still not sure why you sold me and the dragon out for the ancients. He lunged in again. This time she came down hard and sidestepped as best she could in the water. She caught the block, but it left her open, and his dagger flashed up out of the water, nicking her side.
Our people for them, Isifasera. They get the dragon in you as good faith, and they agree to leave the Elflands alone.
You know they won't leave you alone forever. Locke saw him coming in again and chopped at his head. She took another cut on the leg, but her blade bit into his shoulder, and he grimaced as the blood spilled from the deep gash.
I don't need forever, he said. I have people making rings based on the same design as the paladin bands. Cheaper, easier to manufacture. If I get a year, I'll have them ready, and the ancients can have all you humans. They won't need us.
He tucked his dagger into his belt, then switched his rapier to his left hand. It's not about need, Ethel. Locke parried his next thrust, then gave ground as he slashed forward, as adept with his left hand as his right. They'll still turn on you. Her back bumped into a platform, and she tried to slide to the side, but Irithella Fleolon moved to keep her pinned to the wall.
And by the time they do, I'll have my own attack ready.
He smiled, his blade raised and ready.
A good strategist always knows how to wait for the proper time.
A sudden gushing waterfall crashed down upon Locke, dousing her in cold water and leaving her blind. In that moment, Hierotheleth Leolon lunged, his blade spearing through the spray of the waterfall. He hit empty air, and Locke's blade slid into his chest from the side. Time and place, Ethel, Locke said, drenched but smiling as the elf grunted, staggered, and then fell forward onto the platform, his rapier falling from suddenly nerveless fingers. You fight me in the garden I grew up in. You'd better expect me to be used to the water clock splashing down every half hour. She waded over to reclaim her stick sheath, slid her blade back in and climbed out onto the platform. Her leg and arm hurt with cuts added to the bruises, but she still had work to do. From atop the platform, she began looking for her sister's crystal airship. Kale was in the captain's cabin, looking grimly at Thelenia's body when the others arrived. What happened? Derry asked. He looked shaky, and Icy was helping him walk. Nothing good, Kale grimaced. We ran into Gil's power and two nobles with paladin bands out on the estate. Locke's still inside. You? The puppeteer had a band as well, Icy said. In retrospect, it is an obvious way for the ancients to maintain control over what the public learns. The truckers were also present. We tore the ogre's throat out, Ulilenia said, smiling a not very nice smile as she helped a grey-faced and red-eyed Tern sit down. That's one down. Where's Hessler? Kale asked. And when Tern didn't move, and Ulilenia and Icy and Derry all looked away sadly, Kale grimaced. Damn. I'm sorry. Lysadora came into the cabin. The rest of the crew is dead, too. Clean cots. I can raise them as zombies to tell us who did it, but I'd rather not unless... She broke off as she saw Tern. Oh, honey. She stepped forward and put her arms around Tern, who leaned into her and grabbed Desidora's shoulder like a drowning woman grabbing at a branch. Kale pretended not to hear the noises Tern was making. Instead, he quietly said, I can't fly a tree ship. Ulilenia? No.
We cannot stay here, Icy said. They are aware of us and can bring reinforcements we lack. Where's Locke? Derry asked.
She'll be here, Kale grimaced. And if she isn't, Ulilenia knows these woods.
I would rather not stay, Ulilenia said sharply.
Yeah, me neither, Kale said, glaring. And if you've got a better idea, hit me.
A chime sounded outside, and Kale and the others looked through the doorway curiously, then came outside. A wedge of black crystal shimmered into view as it settled to the ground beside the tree ship. It had no balloon. Compared to an airship, it was a knife in a world full of pillows. One of the crystal panes pivoted and slid down, forming a gangplank, and Locke stepped out.
Told you she'd be here, Kale said. We've got about 10 minutes before they find us, Locke called out. Let's move.